Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies.
Welcome to the OIS Transition Programme podcast. My name is David Ledesma, and I'm Distinguished Research Fellow at the Institute. It's my great pleasure to be joined today by Alex Barnes, who's Visiting Research Fellow. And we're here today to discuss his paper, The EU Hydrogen and Gas Decarbonisation Package, Help or Hindrance for the Development of a European Hydrogen Market, that was published by the OIS in March 2023. Now, just to timestamp this recording, we're recording this podcast on the afternoon of Thursday, the 16th of March, 2023. Alex, welcome back to the OIS podcast series.
Thank you, David. It's good to be back.
Well, Alex, can we perhaps start with quite a general question? What is the hydrogen and gas decarbonisation package, and how do you think it fits with the EU's climate change and hydrogen policies?
It's one of the key parts. It's part of the Fit for 55 package, which the Commission published a whole load of proposals in 2021 about increasing the amount of renewables, reducing emissions, carbon pricing, etc. This particular bit was published at the end of 21 in December, the proposals, and it's on how to regulate future hydrogen infrastructure and also a few tweaks to the existing regulation for natural gas infrastructure. And in some cases, it's referred to as the fourth gas package because we've already had three of them and this is the next update.
So why, Alex, is the Commission setting out a regulatory framework for hydrogen infrastructure when, well, it doesn't exist yet?
Well, what they're trying to do is provide certainty for investors in the sector. So for the people who will be producing and using hydrogen and therefore need to know that the infrastructure will be there to connect them. And also, I think there's a certain amount of being scarred by previous efforts to liberalize the gas market. So the gas market, they started trying to liberalize it back in the 1990s, and they didn't manage to get it really right until the 2010s after the third package. And what the Commission wants to avoid this time is entrenched positions, natural monopolies, and making it more difficult to have a single competitive hydrogen market. So they're setting down the rules now.
So what are the main elements of the EU Commission's proposals?
Well, effectively, what they want to do is replicate the framework that they use for natural gas. And in many ways, that's a very sensible thing to do because the natural gas market, it is competitive. It means that gas flows to where it is needed most. It's good at attracting supply, all things that we've seen during the gas crisis of the last year. And so they're trying to replicate that. And they do it in two parts, as it were. They have an initial framework and then they tighten the rules up and make it much more like the current gas framework after 2030. But the types of things that they're talking about are things like ownership unbundling. So in other words, that means that you cannot own hydrogen infrastructure pipelines, for example, if you either produce hydrogen or sell hydrogen to end users. They're also talking about regulated third-party access to pipelines. So in other words, the price for using a pipeline and the rules by which you govern how you book capacity on it, how you balance it, etc., those are all set out by regulation. They also have things in there, for example, saying that they want hydrogen users to be able to choose their suppliers and have a competitive market. So effectively, it's replicating what the existing natural gas framework does. And in that sense, they've set down, and this is one of the key things they want to achieve, is setting down a very clear marker as to this is what it's like, so that people know what to expect, even though the market doesn't yet exist.
So Alex, picking up on that point, what about regulation of LNG terminals? Because, of course, hydrogen may be transported through those terminals in the future. Has that been discussed?
Absolutely. I mean, I was talking about pipelines earlier, but the other two key elements of infrastructure that they want to regulate is hydrogen storage and import terminals. Now, one of the curious elements of this compared to that the gas package, for those who are familiar with it, is that at the moment, in the gas package for natural gas, LNG terminals are subject to regulated third-party access unless you apply for an exemption. For hydrogen, the Commission thinks that because it will be possible to import hydrogen in different ways, whether as ammonia, liquefied hydrogen, or maybe in other carriers, liquid organic hydrogen carriers, for example, they don't think they need to regulate the import terminals. They say it can be negotiated third-party access rather than a default of regulated third-party access, which is the default for LNG terminals today. Curiously enough, for storage, they go the other way. Because they say that hydrogen storage is going to be essential to balancing the intermittency of renewable electricity generation, which can be used to make hydrogen, and because storing of hydrogen is more difficult than storing of natural gas, there they say it needs to be regulated because it's much less open to competition.
Okay, so how did the Commission arrive at this framework then, Alex? You know, is it just a kind of copy and paste of the current regulations, or have they used some other methodology?
Well, I think this is something that it's, for those who are really interested in this, the Commission did an awful lot of work in coming up with these proposals. So whilst, as I said before, they are very, very similar to the current natural gas framework, they didn't just sit down and say, oh, well, we've already got a framework for regulating a gas infrastructure network, let's just use the same. So they didn't do that, even though the end result was very close. Basically, and this underpins the whole Fit for 55 package as well, they did scenarios of energy use and energy production and energy consumption in their primes model, because they did that in order to figure out what kind of energy mix do we need to have in order to get to our Fit for 55 target, which is a reduction in greenhouse gas emissions of 55% by 2030. And what they came up with was, we're going to need hydrogen in the mix. And this is now well known, the fact that you need hydrogen for certain applications like industrial heat where electricity won't do. So that was one element. And then they used another model, the METIS model, which kind of models how energy flows within the system. And from there, they said, right, based on what we think we're going to need in terms of hydrogen, based on how we think the European energy market overall is going to work, this is the kind of infrastructure we're going to need likely. And one of the key elements of it, and they say this quite a lot, is that they expect there to be trans-European flows to get renewable energy in the form of hydrogen from where there's a lot of it to where there's less of it. And as a result of that, they said, we are going to need a trans-European network, trans-European infrastructure. There are various issues with it, like, for example, pipelines can be natural monopolies. We need to regulate it. And in that sense, I think they did a lot of hard work. And it makes sense within that context. If you take all their assumptions at face value and they all work out like that, it makes a lot of sense. But I think there are big question marks about some of those assumptions.
Interesting. So looking at that approach, you know, what are the strengths and weaknesses? And I'm thinking about kind of, you know, regulated third-party access, ownership unbundling, some of the things you mentioned earlier on in this podcast. You know, can you give us, our listeners, some of your views on that?
Sure. Well, it goes back to the earlier question that you had, which is, why are they setting out this detailed regulatory framework when there isn't an infrastructure yet? One of the things is that when the gas market was liberalized, you already had a working gas market. It had plenty of production, it had plenty of demand, it had plenty of supply, and it had an infrastructure. Oh, and by the way, it was also profitable and self-financing. So in other words, you knew that there were people who had gas and wanted to sell it, people who wanted to buy the gas, and between them, they had enough money to make sure that they could pay for the infrastructure. And the infrastructure had already been developed by the time the gas market was liberalized properly in the 2000s. And so regulated third-party access made sense. So, for example, you could set the prices at which you use the pipelines, the tariffs, because you knew there were people who were going to be there to use it. So the users might change, but you knew there was always going to be a demand for gas. And that makes it very easy to kind of set this regulated third-party access. It also made it easy to do things like ownership unbundling, because as a pipeline owner, you knew that even if the people either putting gas in or taking gas out of the network changed, there was always going to be enough there to make it financeable. It's very different for hydrogen. Effectively, none of those certainties apply. So the big obvious one is that hydrogen isn't profitable in and of itself, because it requires government action, whether it be subsidy or regulation preventing the use of fossil fuels, to make it commercially viable. You also have the issue of timing. You know, how quickly is the market going to build up? And even if you know that it's going to reach a certain size by a certain date, how do you finance it in the early years when you build an infrastructure that's set for how much demand you expect in 2030, but in the early years, you've only got one or two users? You can't make them pay for the whole network. It would be just totally unfeasible. And one of the key things, and this is where I go back to the assumptions that the Commission made, is whilst their assumptions and scenarios all make sense within themselves, there are an awful lot of uncertainties as to how much hydrogen is going to be used, how much people are going to use hydrogen versus other low-carbon energy sources, the cost of hydrogen produced domestically versus imports, whether imports are going to be a big part of it, et cetera, et cetera. In other words, there are so many uncertainties that you've got a lot more risk in the value chain than you have for natural gas. And where you have more risk, the problem is that the regulated third-party access approach, the ownership unbundling approach, et cetera, makes it more difficult for the actors within that chain to manage that risk.
Alex, one of the terms we hear being used is pancaking. So do you think you could perhaps explain to us what pancaking is and what is the Commission proposing to do about it?
Pancaking is one of my little bête noires. It's the Dracula of gas regulation. It is the evil that will not die, and it keeps coming back. And I will explain why. This idea, or the problem of pancaking, goes back to some EU documents called Quo Vadis of about nearly 10 years ago now. Effectively, what pancaking means is that the way the European market is set up, the infrastructure, it's divided into zones. And you have to pay a tariff to get into the zone, the entry tariff, and you have to pay a tariff to get out of the zone. But once you've paid to get into a zone, gas can go wherever you like within that zone. And it's the network operators, the TSOs, who manage that on a physical basis. But imagine if you're transporting gas, let's say it lands in northern Germany from Norway, and you've sold it commercially to somebody in Italy. It's got to go through different zones to get to Italy. So it's got to go into Germany, out of Germany, into Switzerland, out of Switzerland, and then into Italy, etc. And at each point, you're obviously paying tariffs. And the concern was that as these tariffs added up across the borders, they were bigger than the difference in the market price between, say, the market price in Germany or the market price in Italy. And that somehow this was an inhibiting trade. And so the idea was that you remove the tariff points at points within the EU because of this pancaking effect. It was inhibiting trade. The analysis is completely fallacious, because the reason why the difference in market prices was smaller than the accumulated transport costs was because there was plenty of supply from numerous distant sources into those individual markets. And so that meant that actually you didn't need to move gas across the borders necessarily. What we have found since the gas crisis is that, guess what? Now that there's a lot less gas around and it's not nearly as plentiful, and also it tends to be coming from certain directions because we no longer have Russian gas, now you get market differentials which are greater than the transportation price because all the transport capacity is booked. This is what the Americans call the basis differential. And therefore, the market price in the gas market balance at market zone at the end of the chain is higher than that of at the beginning of the chain. So that proves that pancaking is not a problem. What is really annoying is that in order to solve pancaking, the Commission is proposing that you only pay an entry tariff when you enter the EU and an exit tariff when it leaves the network to go to the user. The problem with that is it means that you're going to have to get several network operators to agree how to share the revenue potentially across several market zones, which is a nightmare. So it is a solution for a problem which doesn't exist. And by the way, as a solution, it's going to be really difficult to implement. And what the Commission wants to do is they want to apply that to the hydrogen infrastructure network. And I think at best, it's a distraction. At worst, it's just going to make life more difficult than it needs to be. And hydrogen has enough commercial challenges.
I think our listeners will all be saying now, Alex, just say what you think. Just say what you think. Well, look, why don't we end this podcast, as I like to do, by looking forward and and ask the question, where do you think all this is heading? And I think importantly, what are the key signals that you think our listeners should watch out for?
Well, at the moment, the Commission, they propose the legislation. Then it has to be agreed with the Council, who are the member states, and with the EU Parliament. And basically, the Council and the Parliament are finalising their proposed amendments to the Commission's proposals, and then they're going to negotiate in a process that's known as trilogue. So that's basically about underway. The Council is finalising its proposals. I think what we will see is some softening of the Commission's approach. In other words, rather than putting all this really rigorous regulation in place at 2030, it will be later, so maybe 2035, or possibly a bit later, which will alleviate some of the concerns I mentioned earlier. I think, generally speaking, the real thing we need to look for is, as well, in terms of hydrogen infrastructure development, is how quickly those commercial hydrogen chains get established. And that depends heavily on government involvement in terms of hydrogen production or demand. And in terms of infrastructure, if you're not going to allow the companies investing in infrastructure some kind of regulatory flexibility, so for example, in the past, producers and users of natural gas form joint ventures to build the networks, and that helped manage the risk. If you're not going to allow hydrogen value chains to do that, then an alternative is that you get government backing kind of revenue guarantees for hydrogen infrastructure. So those would be the kind of things that I'd look out for. And we should know the final state of the package probably second half of this year. So many things have been delayed because of the Ukraine crisis that, well, if we get another gas crisis, which we may well do, then this could get delayed again because it's already been delayed quite a lot. And then I think it's really going to come down to seeing what are the projects that start actually, putting, concrete in the ground, as it were, or pipes on the ground.
Well, Alex, I have to say, we hope you'll come back on the podcast series later in the year and kind of give us details of the final package as it's been agreed. Well, look, thank you so much for your time today and indeed the insights on your paper, the EU Hydrogen and Decarbonisation Package, Help or Hindrance for the Development of a European Hydrogen Market, that, just to remind you, was published in March 2023. So I hope you've all enjoyed listening to this podcast. Thank you and goodbye to everyone.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. You can find other podcasts, as well as our written research, on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. If you would like more details about our energy transition, gas, oil, electricity, or China research programs, then please contact us at information@oxfordenergy.org.